Today, I'm telling a new story. The new story name is A Warm Welcome Aboard. Joe quickly scanned a sidewalk from a curb to the wall of the terminal. He saw nothing that looked like a laptop case. What was it in? He asked David. A black leather attach. David replied, "This isn't funny. All the information about the contest is on my hard drive. Maybe you left it on the plane." Boris suggested. "I am sure I didn't," David said. "I had it on my shoulder when we came out of here. Then I set it down." He looked around. Even, he continued, "Do you know anything about this?" The boy looked scared. "Now, Daddy, huh? He said, "Not a thing, really. No one in our group has wandered away since we came out here," Frank pointed out. "And no one who isn't in your group has come close enough to use to us to steal something." "Frank, are you saying this is an impossible crime?" Lisa asked, pointing her recorder at him. "There's no such thing," Frank retorted. "If it's really impossible, I can't happen. I read a story once," Boris began. "Who? Jason murdered." Boris ignored him. "This thief had a suitcase with a trick bottom. All he had to do was set the suitcase down on the top of whatever he wanted to steal and whoosh, the object vanished." Even heard that gimmick to Joe. Joe told him, "It sounds pretty clever." "But our Frank said no one came over here with a suitcase. And as for us, we don't even have our suitcases yet. It's probably just some mix-up. Here comes your luggage now," Elizabeth said. "It's about time. The workers must all think they're on vacation or something." "You guys don't seem to understand," David said tensely. "If I even lost all the files on my laptop, that's it for the contest. Finito. Cut put." Everyone crowded around him and started protesting. Lisa thrust her recorder into the center of the group. Kenneth circled up around them, taking one shoot after another. Joe glanced at Frank. "We didn't better do something quick," he said. "Yeah, like find that attach case," Frank replied. "It couldn't have just walked away." Joe glanced at the approaching luggage cart. His jaw dropped. "No," he said tartly. "But it might have rolled away. I will be right back."
Joe sprinted into the terminal and across to the runway side. A little cluster of departing passengers was walking across the concrete upon toward the plane. The cart with their luggage was sitting next to the open cargo bags. Joe started through the door. A police officer in a light blue uniform, white helmet, and white gun belt blocked the way. His name tag read L. Mallet. "Excuse me, sir," he said in a soft Caribbean accented voice. "Are you clear to aboard this aircraft?" "No, officer. I just came in on it a few minutes ago," Joe replied. "But I think my friend's computer case got put on that cart by mistake. Do you think you could check for me, please?" "His name is David Wildman." Mallet glanced over his shoulder at the plane. Then he said, "Please wait here, sir." He went over and spoke to the luggage handler. Together they checked the tags on the 20 or so suitcases. Mallet picked up a black leather case and showed it to the group of passengers. They all shook their heads. He returned to Joe, carrying the case. "Your friend will have to identify this as his property, sir," Mallet said. "Believe me, he will be happy too," Joe promised. "I will go get him." Joe hurried out and came back with David. After showing Mallet his passport, David unzipped the attaché case to check the contents. It does not look as if anything's being disturbed," he told Joe. As they started across the waiting room, he added, "What a weird thing. I guess the porter saw my case and thought it belonged to those people who were leaving." "It could be," Joe said doubtfully. "The way I remembered it, though, the porter did not load the cart. He just stood by. It was the drivers who carried the suitcases from their taxis to the cart. I guess one of them must have picked up your case by mistake." "Well, however it happened," David said, "I owe you one. If it had not been for your quick thinking, my computer and all the contest plans would be on their way back to San Juan by now. I am tempted to complain to the airport authorities, but we don't know who's responsible. Maybe it's better to let it go." The moment they returned to the group, the others crowded around. "Oh God," Elizabeth said. "You found it. An airline lost. I was devastated. I had nothing to wear for 4 entire days. What happened?" "Caesar," asked Joe. "Where was it?" Joe laughed. "About to be loaded for a return flight to San Juan. So you won't have to call off the contest, Jason said. "Cool, let's get going." "Wait a minute," Boris said. "This is a serious matter. Somebody's dirty trick almost ruined everything for us. We must discover who stole David's computer." That did it. 5 minutes later, Joe was seething with frustration. Everyone in the group was a wannabe detective. Each one had his or her far-fetched theory about what had happened, who had done it, and why. Boris was the worst. After explaining that one of the departing passengers must be in the pay of a teen-based competition, he repeatedly demanded, "It is possible, isn't it? Isn't it?" Finally, Frank told him, "Anything is possible, but it just is not very likely." For a moment, Joe had the feeling that Boris was about to throw a punch at Frank, but then thought better of it. A good thing for him, though, Joe. Boris might have spent a lot of time in the weight room, but Joe could tell by the way he moved that he did not have Frank's martial arts skills. If attacked, Frank would have decked him. "We are running late," David said after glancing at his wrist. We had better put this off until later. Personally, I think one of the taxi drivers probably made a mistake. But if any of you was responsible for this stunt, I hope you will have the guts to admit it to me privately. I won't affect your chances in the contest if you do. That's a promise. If I find out that one of you did it, that I will be another matter. Joe met Frank's eyes and saw that he thinking the same thing. David Street was pretty empty, unless one of the group suddenly recalled some crucial fact. The Gaitley party, if there was one, was not likely to be unmasked. Everyone crowded into the dusty van for the short ride to the Yachts Club. The clubhouse was a white wooden building with a shady veranda around all four sides. White wicker tables and chairs were scattered around the lush green lawn. The Yacht Club faced a sparkling blue bay crowded with luxurious boats. As he climbed out of the van, Joe fell in love with a sleek 50-foot sloop. It looked ready to sail around the world. He decided to sign on as a deckhand. Once he had talked his dad into giving him permission, Frank nudged him. "Ground control to Major Joy," he said. "Come in, please." Joy indicated the slope. "What do you say we swap slit for some time along those lines?" Slit was the name of the Hardy's litter outboard runabout. "Great idea," Frank said with a grin. "We could probably swing it if we threw in 300,000 or 400,000 bucks on the side." Caesar joined them. "Can you believe this place?" he said. "There must be millions and millions of dollars worth of boats out there, and this is just one island. Talk about loaded." Successfully, people are always the targets of envy and jealousy, Elizabeth remarked from a few feet away. She did not look at anyone as she said it, but Joe saw the color rise in Caesar's cheeks. Caesar pressed his lips together as if holding back a retort. A taxi pulled up next to the van. The woman who got out looked as if she had stepped out of the pages of a fashion magazine's resort issue. She went over to David and pushed her designer sunglasses upon her forehead. "I was so determined to be here to greet you," she said. "I am hopelessly late." "Have you been waiting for me forever?" David shook his head. "We just arrived," he said. "Gang, I had like you to meet our hostess on this voyage, the editor of Teenway, Bettina Dunn." He went around the circle, introducing everyone. Bettina had been very well briefed. She seemed to recognize each person and know a little something personal about him or her. When David came to Joe and said his name, Bettina smiled. "Ah, yes, one of the celebrated Hardy brothers. I have met your father. I can see resemblance. He must be very proud of you. And of course, this is your brother and partner, Frank." Joe could not help feeling a warm glow. When the introductions were finished, Bettina said, "We will have a moral formal welcome after we aboard Columbed, or for now, I will just say how pleased all of us Teenway are that you could take part in this thrilling and challenging and rewarding contest." Everybody clapped. One of the staff started pulling the group's luggage on the wheelbarrow. David kept a tight grip on his computer case. Bettina led the way into the Yacht Club. Just inside the door, Joe noticed her stop and say hello to a white-haired man in a white slacks and a blue blazer. The man turned away, pretending not to hear her. Bettina returned and kept walking. David was a couple of steps ahead. Joe caught up to him. In a low voice, he asked, "You see the elderly man in the blazer?" Do you know who he is? David raised an eyebrow. You caught that little exchange, did you? This is Walter Maris. He founded Teenway. A few years ago, he was forced into retirement after a corporate takeover. And Bettina, Joe asked, what was her part in the story? She was his discovery. David explained, his crown princess, I guess you had say. But when he was kicked out, she stayed on and rose to the top. He took it pretty hard. I doubt if they have spoken to each other since. I hear he's retired now and living down here full time. Are you going to put them in one of your place? Joe asked as they stepped onto the veranda and Frank joined them. David laughed. I wish I could. Frank gave Joe a questioning look. I will fill you in later, Joe said. Even came running up. Daddy, which one is our boat? Good question. Though Joe, at least 36 big motor cruisers and ocean sailors were busted in the Yacht Club Marina, gleaming in the tropical sunlight. That one, son, David said. He pointed toward the end of the finger pier, the one with the blue smokestack, that's the Columbiad ore. Joyce's eyes widened. The yacht, David indicated, dwarfed all the others in the harbor. It was easily half the length of a football field, with two full decks above the waterline. Frank gave a soft whistle. Shh. Quite an impressive barb, isn't she? David said with a grin. Some Greek shipping tycoon had her built back in the 50s for his French girlfriend. Then they broke up. After lots of ups and downs, the Columbia ended up here in the Caribbean as a charter craft. Some of others stopped to listen to David. When he finished, Selfie, I have heard something else about this boat. I have heard that is under a case. Terrible things happen to the people who sailed on it. Thanks for hearing this story for 18 minutes along with me. Follow our channel and turn on the notification icon in all the apps. Thank you. Bye-bye.